got it. Here we go. 11:06. I'm going to start pulling that wagon. I'll try this wagon that Tom and I ride around in all day long. You don't normally hear it, but now you can. We're spreading news and opinion all over the place. And then we head on back to the barn after we get rid of all the news and opinion. That happens in exactly 35 minutes. And then your opinions come in, and that's where your letters get in here. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the horse, Tom, sitting right there. Patrick. Right, Patrick the horse. By the way, Patrick, the producer of this fine show, I wrote him the other day saying, hey, congratulations, because he left us, I think, on the 14th of May to become a Seattle police officer, so people can call him a racist. I said, hey, congratulations, our ratings are through the roof, 8.2. Never had anything like that. And I wanted to give him some credit. Guess what? Bupka. I get nothing back from him. Like I never existed.
Well, just like you're not supposed to have any contact with Dave, I think that the police department said, listen,
what it is?
Having your connection with John Curley ends today.
By the way, I know no one out there at the Cairo Radio, because they're all jealous of us, listen to the show. So I'm performing a little experiment. I have a bag of chips that are primarily crickets. They're 20% protein. It's crickets. So it looks like a chip, but it's actually a chip with cricket parts built, baked right in. And I'm going to put that on the table, and we'll see how it does at 11:30 time. Social experiment. I would like Ursula to sort of embrace this, because if people see Ursula eating the cricket chips without the word chip on there or cricket on there, they too will join in. So we'll see what happens.
I don't know if it's on the 30-10 diet.
Protein, we're all good.
20%.
Okay, there you go.
Would you eat chips made with crickets?
No.
Well, you'll see if anybody else does.
Here we go. It'll be gone by 1:30.
Oh, easy. Small bag, Tom. Here we go. Major League Baseball sees a sharp drop in attendance. The Wall Street Journal has this story, but if you look at any other place, everybody's reporting the fact that some places are down by 10%, others a smaller percentage of attendance, but just overall, those going to the park to enjoy live baseball has dropped.
That's right. We're talking about between 6.5% to 8.5%, and to put that in some kind of gauge, it went down like 0.7 of a point last year, and maybe 0.8 of a point. So to suddenly have this is only halfway through the season, but to be hovering between 6% and 8% is astonishing kind of stat. And yeah, it depends on the ballpark. So for instance, Toronto, they're down 29%, so that may be an outlier the other way. The thing that struck me the most, the Mariners are having their best season in ages. Our attendance is down 3%.
Come on, everybody.
So even in, super Seattle right now, attendance there's a kind of malaise as it hits baseball, and everyone's wondering why. Do we have any sound on this before I go into this?
No, but I do want to let, in order to boost attendance, we will be giving tickets away.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well,
there's two.
Now, I mean, I think a lot of in April and May, a lot of people were suspicious. Oh, you know, we know what happens to the Mariners. Now
I'm not going to a game, get sucked into this.
They're charging into June so successfully. I think these are going to become higher and higher, hotter and hotter tickets. I noticed there were 44,000 at the Boston Red Sox game. I think that was on Saturday.
Most of them from Boston.
So the question is, are Boston fans?
Yeah.
And finally, the Mariners can held our own. So right now, one of the things is they're speculating. And so what does Major League Baseball say? Ah, it's the weather.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about anything. It's the weather. And it is true that there are some markets where the weather was atrocious, but they pointed to stats. Oakland, San Francisco, and Tampa Bay, where the weather's been a non-factor, they're down 10.9%, 6.7%, and 4.2%. So that seems to be kind of a not very solid suggestion. Another one is they're just not very the teams aren't competitive. Right now we have six teams that are under 400. That means that you win fewer than four games out of every 10. Yeah. And so because of
thanks
that,
thanks for insulting the intelligence of our listeners with that, Tom.
Okay.
Wait, slow that down. Now, what is that again? You're under 400. Go ahead.
But, you know, a lot of people don't pay that much attention to what I'm saying. So by saying it twice, you get the point.
Okay.
And so we have six teams that are just like the Pits. We also have four teams. This is my favorite line in the entire Wall Street Journal story. The Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, and the Mariners are all on pace to win 100 games, which would be a major league record.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the suggestions is maybe the leagues just aren't that competitive. You've got these superstar teams like the Red Sox and the Astros and the Mariners, and then you have these really crappy teams, the Marlins and the Rangers and the Reds and the Royals and the White Sox are just bottoming out, so maybe that's a factor.
Is it also the fact that there's so many games? So Brock Huard said, you know, with football, you get 8 home games.
Yeah.
So if you miss it, you've missed one in there. You're down, you know, out of 8, missed once. That's 1-8,
right.
And the percentage wouldn't do that on Tom for me, Tom?
Yeah, it'd be 1 out of 8 games.
And when it comes to baseball, I think they play 600 games, don't they?
No,
is that what it is?
They play 81 home games.
It feels like 600.
I know.
So then you're like, well, I don't need to go on Tuesday. Well, I don't need to go on Saturday either. I'll catch the next game, next game, next game. And then finally, you just never attend the games. Brock's other thing was there's too many choices and it's too covered too well on television.
Yeah,
in 1983, they had 13 cameras to cover a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
By 2006, 28 cameras. And I don't even know how many cameras cover it now.
That's more than double, John.
I can tell. Just a second. What is that again?
That's more than double. 13 to 28.
Welcome to the math hour here on the Tom and Gurley Show. So Brock's theory is people just rather watch it on television.
And Brock's theory is extended to, he says, college football. The hotbed of college football is, down there in the South with Louisiana, LSU and Georgia and Florida and all these great hot teams like Alabama. And even they in the SEC are experiencing a dip in attendance. That right now I think it's true that most sports work better when you're if you got a nice TV and you're sitting in the comfort of your home, you don't have to hassle about, you know, finding your seat and parking and everything else. That it's the convenience of TV is probably what's dampening things. Now, ironically, there's nothing mentioned about that in the Wall Street Journal article.
That's weird.
Or proposals.
Because a year or year and a half ago, the Journal had a story about how colleges across the country are putting up these gigantic screens.
Right.
So trying to entertain the crowd as much as they possibly can. Huge screens and giving as many replays and slow-mo as they possibly can. So while you're sitting there, you have almost an in-the-living-room experience while at the stadium.
Which is weird because what they're doing is they're doing their damnedest to try to recreate the experience of being
at
home on TV. It's like that is – it seems counterproductive, but right now, yeah. And the other cautionary note about this is halfway through the season.
Yes.
A lot can change. A lot of these races may be very competitive. And by the end, so that's why Major League Baseball, which does not like, this is not good promo for them that their attendance is way down, that we wait till the end of the year and we'll get a better assessment.
Or wait right now as we give you 2 tickets, 1-888-973-5476. We'll take the first caller at 1-888-973-5476 to win 2 tickets to the June 30th, that's my birthday, Mariners game, and the Mariners host the Royals on my birthday. Once again, turning ahead the clock to the future, the first 20,000 fans will receive a realistic Mariners cap. A futuristic Mariners cap.
Yeah, realistic one. It's a hologram, but it looks really...
It's a futuristic hat, Tom. Buy tickets at Mariners.com. Don't forget you can hear the entire Royal series on 710 ESPN. That's June 30th, my birthday. They're going to be playing baseball, and you can get tickets right now by calling 1-888-973-5476. We'll take the first caller. Let's see. You want to talk about Phil Mickelson for a minute there, Tom?
Okay.
So Phil Mickelson, who everybody absolutely adores on television, he has a really cool personality, kind of a laid-back golfer that has made incredible comebacks in golf, and he is one of the reasons people tune in to watch. So Phil is struggling on one particular hole. He hits the putt. It's a downhill putt. And after hitting the putt, he then realizes, oh, crap, this thing is going off the green, probably onto the fringe, and then maybe back over, and maybe possibly it could run right into a bunker. So he kind of takes a few quick steps, and then he actually jogs over the ball while it is still moving.
Right, yeah.
And like you would if you were playing putt-putt.
Exactly.
Like you don't want it to go into the pirate's mouth. You run ahead with your club and hit it back the other way, which is exactly what he did.
Yes. And so he ended up shooting a 10 on the hole, and which is like, I don't know if that's 6 or 7 over par.
5 over.
Yeah, 5 over. Okay. And the key here was that he took a 2-stroke penalty.
Yeah.
So, and that, okay. So, you know, I was watching the hit, and they said, okay, well, that's going to cost him. I've never seen that. That's crazy. But afterwards, he said, well, yeah, he said, I just didn't want to have to go chasing that thing, going, having to roll all the way down. It just felt like, yeah, I was going to, you know, I figured, my calculation was, okay, it's going to cost me 2 strokes. Yeah, that's okay. I'll go ahead and hit it. So he knew it was against the rule. Now, rules and did it anyway, willing to take the penalty. And so now there's a lot of analysis. This wasn't happening at the very time of the broadcast, but it's now been discovered. If you do something like that and you get a significant advantage out of stopping the ball from moving, then those are grounds for disqualification.
Yes.
Now, the USGA decided, no, that they weren't going to do that, by determination, that the ball was not deflected or stopped by Mickelson. The article saying, how can you say it was deflected or
that thing
stopped?
Was running past.
That's ridiculous. That's
so the people have now said, we see a media conspiracy here. You did not disqualify him because you wanted people to continue to watch your coverage of the tournament.
Yes. And, of course, they deny that. To me, that seems like a bit of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the argument that right now where the argument's happening is, what is an advantage? How significant an advantage was that? He was 21 strokes behind the leader. I mean, it wasn't like he was competing for the championship. He had scored a 10 on the hole, even with that cheating. And so maybe they'd say, well, it's a minor play. The only reason it's getting as much attention as it is because he's such a superstar in golf. So, I mean, but right now there's the golf world is all a Twitter about the decision.
I've never seen a pro do that before.
No, I haven't.
Normally
either.
You get mad, you watch it run past the hole, runs off the green.
Yeah.
And I think it was going to go in the bunker. And he just realized, you know what?
Yeah.
Stop this crap right now. And when he hit it back. He didn't even try to like aim. He just back the other way.
Yeah, again, the putt-putt golf comparison is apt. They show one highlight last night with this, and it's happened once before. I don't know if it was in the Open, but the golfer was like walking up the hill toward the green, and the ball came right by him, and he just kind of lashed out, sort of like this, not practice, just going to hit it like, oh, criminy.
Right.
So.
Did you see Incredibles? You did, Tom. And your movie review is that it lacks. It's not down. It doesn't live up to what Incredibles 1 was.
That's right. Well, or other Pixar films. It doesn't have that emotional wallop that you expect. It's still a very highly entertaining movie. When Incredibles number 1 came out, it didn't have that either. But we hadn't had a whole string of emotional Pixar films, you know, to set up our expectations.
So this Incredibles 2. Actually comes with a warning.
Incredibles 2 might be the perfect first movie for little Luca Figueroa.
It was really good. It was really cute. We waited a really long time to see that movie.
But some say scenes like this one.
Screen Slater interrupts this program for an important announcement.
Are affecting more than just the characters. People are tweeting the strobe effects the villain uses gave them nausea, or worse, triggered a seizure.
So as a result, I walked out of the theater with a migraine.
That's why blogger Veronica Lewis took to Twitter in a thread that's now gone viral, essentially asking Disney and Pixar to do as their character says.
Time to make some wrong things right.
She makes it clear she thinks the strobing lights are an integral part of the plot. She just wants viewers with photosensitive conditions to have a heads up and the movie to come with a warning.
My goal in writing the thread was that if I even helped one person not deal with effects of strobe lights from watching this movie, I would consider myself a success.
Mm. Did you watch it with the feeling that somebody who had epilepsy would be thrown into shock on this one?
It did not occur to me. However, now that I reflect on it, I realize, the villain is a guy who basically has your screen takes over your life, and so there are these strobe effects. And I've heard on good authority, or at least Jacob's authority, that they do have these warning signs now posted at local theaters to tip people off.
At least in Federal Way, the Commons Mall, they had them up.
Yeah.
They had the warning on the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And the thing is, I think that's fine. Now, if this was a movie, a foreign language film that 17 people would see, I don't think there'd be all this hullabaloo. But Incredibles had an incredible weekend. It's a huge box office smash, so lots of people will be seeing it. And there may be a lot of photosensitive people going. So now they'll be fair warned.
Before we say goodbye to the 11:30 hour, just the latest casualties, Seattle Progress. We learn of a man who sold hats. And the hat store had been around for
84 years.
84 years. Wow. And now, because transfer of the title of the building, they are not going to be offering the guy that sells hats the opportunity to have the business shut down while they retrofit the building and then allow him to come back. They did not offer him a lease. So the hat guy there on, what street is that?
Is that Union? Street? Third and Union, maybe?
I think so, yeah. Will no longer be around.
Barry Utz, is it?
Utz, yeah.
hat shop.
Berniots.
And Berniots. The idea here is this is just, and you know, Dory does this a lot on his show too. He just sort of, you know, old Seattle, you know, right. going away. And this is one of those stores. As I knew that you would have a story there because Evening, that seems like the kind of place that Evening Magazine would do at least once every 5 years.
I think it won best place to buy a hat in Evening Magazine's Best of Western Washington.
And I always, so it's right near where I catch the bus. So I'm down there a lot and I don't wear hats and I don't think I've ever even been inside. But I always liked walking by it because I thought it just felt like a little a bit of like a 1940s movie,
right.
you know, scene to me to have it there. He said that, I mean, they are financially viable, which is amazing. He sells like something like 600 hats a year. So it's not like it's an unsuccessful business, but where that is, downtown Seattle has become such a hot spot that it probably can't withstand the commercial pressure. I don't know what they said. It was a vertically integrated building developer who said there would be no room for him, at least at that choice, you know, street level place.
It was always assumed that it was JFK who killed the hat business.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he didn't wear a hat when he was sworn in on inauguration in January. That has turned out to not necessarily be true. People that have investigated said, it's nice. It seems to all fit together, but the numbers don't add up.
Oh, is
Kennedy
that right?
was the one that killed the hats.
Yeah.
Because yeah. the story comes up all the time, the same way they said that Clark Gable killed men's undershirt industry. I don't know why we dropped that on Clark Gable, yeah.
Did he take off his shirt? I think it might have been it happened one night and he was wearing a certain kind of a t-shirt as opposed to another kind of t-shirt. I don't know. But I think that may have been the thing you're talking about here. Yeah, the funny thing was that Berniot's place has been in the news a lot just because people find it charming. And they cite in the Seattle Times article an article about him in 1964 when they say, here's a hat maker who survived the Kennedy bear head.
Yes.
And all this, so. They've been a great fodder, and this might have been the last story.
You don't look like a guy that wears hats, Tom. No, you're not a hat guy. It looks like you have a very large skull.
I got extra. I got a huge head.
So you'd have to actually have two hats taped or sewn together in order to fit your head, right?
I'm sure they can make custom-made hats. If they can get a hat for Shaq, they could probably make a hat for me.
I went through a bizarre stage in my life where I was a liberal, and I wore a beret. I mean, how sad is that? Imagine this. People thought I was gay.
I feel sad.
Imagine that.
Yes. I feel bad for the beret.
I was living in New York City. I had a beret and I had lots of scarves.
Oh, I wish I knew.
What the hell was I doing? Rolling my own cigarettes. Boy, is I a mess. Protesting against Ronald Reagan. Oh, my God.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, my father was just
high
like,
five,
what
John.
The hell? No. That was terrible. This is an awful story to tell, but just quickly. My father came to pick me up at the bus station because I didn't have any money to get home. And when he came to get me, I had my beret and I had my hair permed. And I had this long coat on and I was smoking a rolled up drum cigarette, right? And my father rolls down the window and says something really horrible to me.
Yeah.
Got in anyway. I needed a ride. I'm right back. To us to be a big part of the show. You get a chance to be letter of the day right at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Hannah Scott. Hannah comes in. Hold on, I got to get her music. Or she's not allowed to talk on the radio. Hang on. Just this her little test. Put chips out there, Tom.
Oh.
And it says on the bag, eat a bug. And Hannah Scott, what do you think? You've consumed one of the chips. You didn't realize that you were eating three chips.
Three chips.
You didn't realize you were eating crickets.
No, and you were so interested in me eating them, I was concerned. And I asked Sully before I left, I go, is he trying to play a trick on us?
Yes, and?
And I said, he said he didn't know. So I ate one, and they were good. They taste like barbecue.
There we go.
Are they really crickets?
Yeah, and he was testing to see who listens to the show.
Oh.
Oops.
I was busy. Hard at work.
Thanks a lot, Hannah. Appreciate that. For one, for eating the crickets.
Yes.
And then also the fact that you don't listen to the show while you're out
I
there.
Always listen to it when I'm not in the newsroom. Seriously, were there crickets in those chips?
Yes.
That's all they were made of.
That's all they're made out of.
They were very good.
It says eat a bug. It says it right on there. All right. Thank you, Hannah. Appreciate that.
I didn't tell you they're barbecued.
I didn't know they're barbecued either. I haven't eaten one of those things. How about Hannah had three, and then she realizes, hey, I'm eating crickets. Didn't care. All right, there you go. Let's see. The people's egos are bigger than meditation and yoga, a new study finds. Meditation has swept across the country
And you get more and more people that are being aware, she's having another one. In fact, I think it's SeaTac or Philadelphia International Airport is going to have a meditation room.
Is that right?
I think it's Philadelphia. That there's a big sign that says, coming soon, meditation room. I thought, wow, that is fascinating. If it is getting into a place where people are finding environments that is advantageous to meditation, it really shows this awareness culture, the marketing of quote-unquote awareness is sweeping across the country.
And this is counterproductive or counterintuitive, I guess, to most of Western civilization, because this is all about how the self is an illusion, that we need to have this selfless worldview, that we collapse the ego, that the ego is like, in effect, non-existent, that you renounce all individual desires. It goes against everything that I think most Western civilization seems to be, you know, moving toward. And so they did this interesting study about, since if that's really the purpose of meditation and yoga, which comes out of the Buddhist teaching, then your ego should be, you know, deflated, I guess.
Yes.
And yet they did this big study, and they said, here's why we want to do the study. What the Buddhist teaching is, that you'll somehow overcome your ego conflicts, conflicts with William James is a 19th century psychologist, or maybe 20th century psychologist, who argued that practicing any skill breeds a sense of self-enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
So if you practice something, he says, you will, you know, feel better about yourself because of it. And they said that sort of goes counter to the Buddhist teaching. So let's see if we actually did. And they did these three studies where they asked you to compare yourself to the average other person doing yoga. Then they did a test assessing your narcissistic tendencies. And finally, a self-esteem scale. And they noticed that everybody had a significantly higher sense of their own self-enhancement on all three tests. If you know, then when they hadn't done yoga for 24 hours. So after you do a session of yoga, you feel much better about yourself. You're prouder of yourself. You have this stronger ego. Then they did the same thing versus meditation, and the same thing happened with meditation. So they said that is counterproductive or counter the teachings of the Buddhists. If yoga and meditation is supposed to have you kind of deflate your ego and dissipate your ego, instead you feel better about yourself and increase
your
ego.
Well, those people aren't doing it right.
And isn't it? Well, no, John, you laugh, but that is the culmination of this article. So in other words, it's counterproductive to do what the Buddhists claim. And then they say, Could it be that the Western versions of meditation and yoga are not doing it right, that they aren't really, they really are more about self-enhancement than they are about egoless moves, and that maybe the, you know, how many thousands of years of Buddhist teaching can't be overturned by one single study that suggests that maybe it is actually a bugo, you know, an ego-boosting experience.
Well, a Buddhist monk came up with this app called Headspace. And I learned about it. I saw a Wall Street Journal article about the top five apps that you can find on a Silicon Valley genius billionaire's phone.
Okay.
And the first one that came up was this one, Headspace.
So welcome back to the Headspace journey. And today, 24. Now, when we're talking about integrating this quality of awareness into everyday life, there are essentially two ways of doing this. One is to integrate it into sort of doing things, into everyday activities, being present with whatever we're doing. Another way is to find short sort of bursts of time throughout the day when we can almost do a mini version of this exercise.
So what they're asking you to do is in the tent. Went right into this.
That'll snap you out of it. Ego enhancement.
I had it up on my phone. How embarrassing. Can't shut it off.
Turn the thing up. Throw it in the water.
How embarrassing. What they teach you in the thing is from 5 minutes to 10 minutes to 20 to 30 minutes. You get better and better at it. And what you're supposed to do is, while you breathe, focusing only on the breath, because that is the moment now, your mind will have different thoughts and feelings go by. And they want you to be able to identify the feeling, that, oh, that's a feeling. And then, like taking a feather and lightly brushing it across the top of a glass, you simply notice. It's all about noticing. Well, that's a feeling. And then a thought goes by. Oh, that's a thought. And you don't attach yourself to either one of these feelings or thoughts, and you create some separation between feelings and thoughts, which are not necessarily true. They might be based in the future or based in the past, and all your brain is doing is constantly trying to make itself entertained. So what they're saying with this meditation is you pull back, You create space. You recognize thoughts and feelings. You don't become your thoughts and feelings because that's not who you are. And by doing that, by creating the separation, you're not caught up in the world of anxiety. And that's the point of meditation. So you do it for 10 minutes, but then what they're hoping for is 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And then every time, even in life, when you're not meditating, you are able to still have that space between you.
Yes. And what they say, all the studies show that it reduces stress.
Yes.
And so maybe the point is to adopt these Buddhist teachings without the Buddhist teaching itself. In other words, the manifestation of the Buddhist teaching is supposedly through yoga and meditation.
Uh-huh.
But maybe what this article is suggesting is that we've detached it from the Buddhist teachings, and it may be all for the good anyway.
I practiced it the other day on the air, and you didn't even know it.
Is that right?
You accused me of wanting to kill every heroin addict.
No, not heroin addict, but yes, it was a homeless.
Yeah, a homeless.
And it wasn't an accusation. I said, what if you want to, so anyway, so what did you do?
Rather than taking it and being deeply hurt and insulted by the fact that you said you would be happier if you could kill every one of them. I was able to separate Tom and not, it's the beauty of me, and...
It's the beauty of me every moment on this show.
But I was in a meditative awareness state. And by the way, get ready to play me out with some Nickelback, some photograph, would you? Hold on. And I didn't engage in that. And I had some space, and I was able to say, well, I'm not going to get caught in that emotion, which I probably would have fired back something nasty at you. Mm-hmm. And then we would have, the conversation wouldn't have gone anywhere. And that space, this meditation thing, really, I do it every single day.
Yes.
I have more than 620 minutes of me meditating. It gives you a running clock.
Yeah.
I think they charge you like $8 a year or something like that, but it's well worth it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But are you egoless?
I'm working on that. I mean, I'm not like Don O'Neill.
What's that mean?
I don't know. I just thought I'd throw that out there. But it's called, the app is called Headspace. I'm a big fan of it.
Okay, yeah. But I mean, I think that you are not adopting the Buddhist teachings because everything about you screams ego.
Here's this beauty of me again.
Yeah, you're meditating now?
Yeah, I got some distance on that. Yeah. Come right back with your letters.
And Nickelback.
Northwest.com. I must have done it half a dozen times. I wonder if it's too late. Should I go back and try to graduate? Last better now than it was back then. If I was them, I wouldn't let me in. The only radio station in America playing this song right now.
That's a reason for that.
Thank you for playing Nickelback. Chaz used to not play it. I would go, Chaz, play Nickelback on the way out. And he'd say, no. I don't see your name on the show.
Andrews?
Andrew, doesn't matter. Andrew knows. Andrew knows what side his bread is buttered with, or something like that. Doug's Linwood Mazda.
A finger or a knife?
Either way, still lets butter on the bread. Doug's Linwood Mazda brings by a car and lets the mailman drive it. The mailman brings it right to our door with letters. How are the bug chips going out there?
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Okay, now John is checking on his Bug Krispies. Thanks. I can't eat them when I got the news to do.
Well, you just—they're so good and good for you.
Yep.
Teeny tiny lady, where are you over there? Oh, there she is in her pickle jar. Hi there.
Hello.
The new dress she's got on. When did she get out to go shopping? I don't know where she finds that stuff. We get the letter of the day in just a minute, but let's get started now.
So we are on day—I don't know—47 of the immigration debate. Yes, a lot of people weighing in. 206. Requesting asylum is not illegal. You may come to the border with your children and request asylum. This does not make you illegal.
Right. That's why they don't go to the border. They go to other crossings, and that's where you get the illegal part. 253. I agree. Trump's methods of controlling illegal entry is brutal and aggressive. I would be cold-hearted if I did not acknowledge that. But I only hope that these children are being fed, bathed, and provided adequate housing. It saddens me that they're experiencing the trauma of being separated from the families. However, I do believe that illegal entry is unacceptable, and it's unreasonable to expect U.S. taxpayers to be on the hook for refugees from all corners of the world. It must be controlled, and other countries should share the burden. I don't see a good solution to this problem other than deterrence.
And at 360, we cannot afford to take care of everyone. We are the nicest country in the world when it comes to immigration, and we are being taken advantage of because of it.
There you are.
I think there's some European countries that would disagree with that, but...
Yeah, Sweden took in a ton of immigrants, and now they're like, no longer. Yeah. Let's see, 425. So in 20 years, all our songs will be like Bing Crosby is singing?
This is women's voices getting lower and lower. Bing Crosby has this rich baritone.
Yeah, thank you.
Margaret in Tacoma writes
that for?
My voice is so low, people think I'm a man on the phone.
425. You know what? You even sound very masculine on the letter that you've written here. 425. This crap is all conjecture. It's hormonal. It's in the milk. It's in the food that causes girls' voices to go down. There's also a simple fact that is proven by the military. Women in higher voices command attention from both men and women better. So why would women want to lower their voices?
Boy, that goes counter to what the source of our materials. I'll have to check into that. And 360. You both seem so doubtful that a person's voice can be adequately synthesized by a computer sampling the person's recorded speech. Yet you have no qualms about accepting Siri's or Alexa's voice. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Good 360. Kari, not Carrie. Is that right?
Yeah, that's good.
I don't believe women's voices are deepening. I had a slightly inappropriate boss once tell me that I have a leg up the second I walk into an interview because I'm tall and I have the voice of Sigourney Weaver.
Wow.
I believed him, and I remember working on my tone to control a room during presentations in college.
So her opening line was, I 100% believe.
Oh, believe. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Thanks,
Carrie.
Carrie. And the Kimmel versus Cruz, 206. Yes. I can't believe I heard John say he didn't like Kimmel because he always makes fun of everyone's faces.
Yes.
Good grief. John spends the entire day making fun of everything about everyone's face and body.
I don't make fun of it. 206. Ew, please tell John to talk about being nude. It's tell him to stop talking about it. It's disgusting. I have to wash my eyes out.
509. Really? The ding-a-ling drop sends me
really?
The hysterical
And
laughter.
Now it is time for the letter of the day.
Already?
Wait, we were late getting into it.
I guess so.
Here we go.
Letter of the day comes from Larry in West Seattle.
Oh, good.
Curly.
Yes.
You speak passionately about immigrants breaking the law to enter the country.
Mm-hmm.
But let's put breaking the law into perspective.
Yeah.
You relish jaywalking, mm-hmm. routinely violate HOV lanes, mm-hmm. speed limits, obscene gestures to toll cams,
sure.
no wonder windshield wipers,
yeah.
Cooked a chicken in a geyser, mm-hmm. and banned from a national park, not to mention you're waterboarding your local raccoons. Yet you did not get confined in a Walmart and deported back to Issaquah. Give the poor huddled masses a chance to breathe free!
Out of time. Bye-bye.